Do you want to know what it takes to work as a high-performing executive assistant? You'll find out when you listen to the EA Campus podcast. Join me, Nikki Christmas, the founder of Practically Perfect PA and the EA Campus, for a weekly interview with successful assistants who all have first-hand experience and lessons to share on what it takes to excel in the role. Tune in, get inspired, and learn how to create an assistant career where you are valued, motivated, and ready to face every challenge head on. Whether you are an assistant just starting in your career or prepared to move to the next level, building a successful assistant career just got a little easier with the EA Campus podcast. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the next episode of the EA Campus podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Catherine Wright today. Hi there, Catherine. Thank you so much for joining us.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
We always start with it's a big question, but we always start with it. Can you tell us a little bit about your career to date?
It is a big question and a very good question. So I've had a very eclectic and very varied career, starting off in sales admin back straight out of college, moved on to sales, which pounding the streets, trying to sell random things, and then onto the phones, which I'd never, ever do again. And then I got into kind of just normal office administration type roles. So back into sales admin. I did a bit of PR, did a bit of HR, and I really liked that kind of role. I liked being involved with other people, and that really steered me towards becoming a PA. My first PA role was for the headmistress of a private girls' school. That was about, 12 years ago now. And then I took a year out to raise my daughter. And then trying to get back into work was actually really hard because I wanted then to go part-time. So trying to find the right role part-time, it wasn't easy. So I stumbled into a couple of really random roles, including a parish clerk for a local parish council, which was an interesting experience, to say the least, into a call centre, which was, again, a very interesting experience. But it all gave me lots of grounding and lots of insight into how different businesses work. And then I landed, again, back into my older role of being a PA for the operations director of a social company, and then progressed on to become the PA to the executive director of customer services in the same business. And then that just thought, I just thought, yeah, this is me. This is where I want to be. This is what I want to do. And this is what I feel like I'm good at. And then restructuring there meant that I really didn't have a direction there anymore. So I started looking around again. Applied for a completely different role at the company I'm at now. And they said, look, not really suitable for you, but our CEO needs a PA. Why don't you come in and have a chat? I had the best interview I think I've ever had in my career path. It was like an hour and 45 minutes of just a really good conversation. I basically told them what I wanted to do, told them what I could do, told them how I could make things work there. And then on my first day, I wrote my own job description, which is quite an interesting way of starting a job. I've been there just shy of 2 years now and was promoted to executive assistant last July. So just shy of a year of being a PA there. I've got the EA role, which is always definitely my goal and what I wanted to do. And it's just gone from strength to strength there.
That's fantastic. There's absolutely loads of stuff I want to pick up on, particularly, around the job description and how you went about having that kind of the confidence to have a conversation with your executive in the interview. But I'm going to slow my roll a little bit, because the first thing I just want to know is, where in the world are you? So I know you're in the UK, but are these London-based roles? Are these outside of London?
So I live in Chertsey in Surrey. So I'm about 35 minutes outside of London. The roles I've had generally have been in and around this area. I've grown up around this area, so generally it's always been near here. I was at Unilever and Walton-on-Thames for quite a while for their HR shared services. And then the social housing company I worked for was in Teddington in Middlesex. So that was what's formerly called Greater London. I've never really been a commuter. It's never been something that's ever, I've never had to sit on a train to go to work, which I'm actually really grateful for. My commute to Teddington was 45 minutes. The joys of the M25, residential parking, having to find parking stuff. It was like, it was quite a chore having doing that morning and evening. And now the business I work for is a 7-minute walk. I'm not going to lie and pretend I'm amazing and do my steps every day, because I do tend to drive to work, which is despicable, and I shouldn't be proud to admit that. But I always have a good excuse.
Yeah, but it's British weather.
I think, I need to pop to the shops afterwards. I always give myself a good reason as to why I'm jumping in the car. So yes, this is my life is in Surrey, really.
Fantastic. Yeah. As I said, there is loads to unpick, but why don't you tell us a little bit about the main aspects of your role as the EA to the where you are now?
Okay, so supporting him, the standard diary management is color-coded. I know what I'm doing for the rest. He knows what he's doing for the next 6 months of his life, really. I'm quite meticulous about things like that. Travel arrangements, because we have a lot of international clients. He travels quite frequently. Like this month, he's in two or three different countries at some point. So that was actually a new thing. Like a lot of intensive travel arrangements was quite a new thing for me in this role. But I really enjoy it. Organising the board. We have seven directors, including the CEO. So I sit in on all the board meetings. The standard minutes, note-taking, actions, follow-up, etc. But one of the expansive things that kept when I went from PA to EA was becoming more involved in the strategic projects and I really feel like I've got a seat at the table there, which is fantastic for me. I really feel like I've earned that space and I have a voice. I get quite involved in the culture club. We have relative different socials and things that we do to support the colleagues in the business. So I get involved in a bit in that. Because of the experience I've had in the various different areas of in various different industries, I'm able to bring a different kind of voice and a different insight into things. These guys have been in tech, this is a tech company, pretty much all of their lives. Having a different experience, I can bring a different voice and different ideas to the table. But I really, really enjoy it. No 2 days are the same. Sometimes I'm looking at capacity and how other people are working, the business processes. Then I'm looking at compliance. Then I'm doing interviews. Like we've set up a new team and I've been quite instrumental in the interview process for that and the recruitment for that. So I really like the fact that I can literally turn my hand to anything and I'm just given the option and the autonomy to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think as well, when you've come from the background where you've worked in what I would describe, and I'm not saying there aren't other roles that are tough, but I would say sales, working in call centres, those kind of jobs, which is my background as well, prepares you for so much.
Absolutely.
Communication skills, having a thick skin, tenacity, all of those things.
Yeah.
If you learn those at an early age or at the start of your career, it really sets the groundwork for EAs.
It really does. And it's the firefighting element of things and the thinking on your feet. And like you said, it's the resilience and having to have a thick skin. Cold calling is the most hideous job I've ever done. How people do that, I've absolutely hats off to people who have the resilience to be able to do that all the time. It is tough because no one wants to speak to you. Working in a call center and retention, people wanting to cancel things and you having to like persuade them to stay and give them all the reasons why they shouldn't leave you, all whilst being listened to and having call quality and compliance and all that kind of things. It was a real it really stood me in a good stead to be able to go and just get on with things and let things affect you and things like that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I used to work for both in a call center, exactly as you said, for dealing with people who wanted to leave the business or leave the company.
Yeah.
And also selling, I used to have to sell gas, British gas.
Oh, wow.
So it was exactly what you said. No one wants to speak to you.
Yeah.
So then going in to organise a meeting as an assistant, never felt that stressful.
I'm like, it is. Yeah, absolutely. And when you're trying to look at diary management and trying to accommodate 20 people, this is nothing. Wait until you get into a call centre.
So it sounds like your commute in the morning is a pretty nice one. I'm not going to lie. It sounds great. But talk us through your morning routine and how you like to start your day.
Okay. So I used to get up at the very last minute and then be screaming and running around like a banshee trying to get out the door. But I thought, no, this is not good karma for the start of anyone's day. And regardless of the fact I've got a 7 minute commute, I've still got to do the school run. I've still got to prepare myself for the day because I don't have that downtime that I'm sat in a car for half an hour to get rid of the morning and then start my day type thing. I've got to be completely ready up. I generally get up for the children to allow myself just 15 minutes of my day to myself. Unload the dishwasher while the kettle's boiling, put a load of like all the mum stuff that you have to do. Sort the breakfast table out, get the children up. Usually takes several attempts to get them out of bed. Although typically inset day to day, my daughter was up and about at 7:15. On a school day, I'd be dragging her out of bed at like 7:45. Always the way.
Always the way.
Yeah. I actually said to her, what are you doing up? Go back to bed. Anyway, getting my son ready. He's nearly 18 at college. So that is a full on Kevin and Perry moment of trying to get him out of bed so I can get him to the station. So yeah, drop him to the station, take my daughter to school. My daughter's school is actually on the same road as my company office. It's literally that cushy. And then, yeah, just walk into the office, set my desk up. I've generally opened all the blinds in my area because everyone likes to be in darkness. They're total vampires. And then just think, right, and then set myself up for the day. I do quite often check my work emails on my phone in the morning just while the kettle's boiling or something, just so I can see if anything's come in overnight or after I left the office, just to see if I've got to get on with something at 9 o'clock or whatever. And then I'm in the office and then ready to go. I'm generally in before my boss, and then it's obviously have his... I'm still quite traditional. I still will make the tea. He's not that boss. He will not expect me to make tea. He does make my tea, but it's not very good, so I generally make it. So I do that, and then ready for the day ahead.
I used to be exactly like that. I'm very fussy with my tea as well. So I remember people saying to me, "You don't always have to make the tea. You know that, but not those
but
guys."
I do.
I'm like,
fine.
It's fine.
I do. It's fine. If I want to enjoy my cup of tea, I have to make it.
Appreciate the effort, but it's fine. I'll make it.
Yeah.
So. What does an average day look like for you? Is it a fast-paced office? Are there points in the day where you can have some focus time? How does your kind of time management work during the day?
So actually, I've been working on my own time management quite a lot recently. I am incredibly meticulous at organising everybody else. Like, my boss will have focus time in his diary. He'll have his travel time in his diary. He'll have his actions. So if he's got a specific action he has to do that week, it'll be written out in a focus time with all the links to all the emails that he needs about it and all that everything's there. Whereas when it gets to me, all my organizational battery is completely run out. I'm like, oh, just do what I need to do when I need to do it. So I realized I was being quite reactive, and that's not productive really. So I've been really working and focusing on that to be able to give myself the focus time. So I physically put focus time in my diary. I've got a project management organizational thing on my computer now as well, where I'm able to really structure that time. So it is quite reactive, in so much as if he's sat in the office next to me, he'll fire things at me completely random. There'll be generally not a lot of structure to what he's going on in his head, but it means I'm able to pick things up a lot quicker when we're both in the office. But I'm really trying hard now to not be on emails like straight away. I live in Outlook. So trying to come out of that, give myself that focus time. And one of the things I'm working on at the moment, the project, is something to do with the US. So obviously having to wait for the US to wake up. Thankfully it's East Coast, but having to wait for the being ready when they are awake, so then I can respond quite quickly and get things done within the day. Otherwise, obviously, it drags on to the next day. Sometimes it's fast paced. Sometimes it's quite, immediate. And there's lots, like yesterday, we were doing recruitment and it was all very last minute and had to get a lot of stuff done ready for a Monday starter. So that way it was quite tight deadlines, but generally it's quite calm and easy paced. I'll say that now on Monday. Monday's going to be an absolute nightmare. I probably curse myself.
Is that just the type of work that the organization does, or has that been sort of, is that led by your executive? Is he quite a calm person? The culture there, I think when somebody says the culture at the office can be quite calm and everybody is not rushing around putting out fires, it tends to be quite deliberate from the executive. So I wonder if that's the case for you.
We are a people-centric IT consultancy. So generally, the only urgent thing is if we've got a big RFP come in and the deadline's in 2 weeks, then all focus time has to go onto that because it's the CEO and the commercial director that actually creates that stuff. So that kind of thing is quite deadline specific, and it tends to be quite up against it during that time because the rest of the world's still going on, but they don't have time to be focusing on that. So that's when I really step in and try to deflect anything that's coming in as much as I can. He's quite in his head, my boss. It's taken me the best part of the 2 years that I've been there to really extract stuff out of him and get him to delegate. Delegation was a real thing, and I spent the first 6 months saying you have to give him stuff, but now it was a trust thing for him. So now he knows he can, like I sometimes have to physically price, metaphorically price things out of his hands to give me to let me do stuff. But this, we put up the trust now in the relationship where he knows I can just get on with things. And the project with the recent recruitment, he knows that he could just give it to me and I've done it and it's starting. You've got two new starters and it's all working well and etc. So it's just trying to get this stuff out of his head and extract what he needs done. And also we've learned now that sometimes I will do things in a slightly different way, but I'll still get the result, whereas he thinks you should do it that way. So again, it's just a trust thing. We've learned that it's a bit of give and take. I do try to do things as much in the same way that he would do to keep him happy, but actually it all works, same result, just a different journey.
Yeah, I love that. I think as well, it's absolute music to my ears when I hear from an assistant who says things like, my executive is quite in his head, it takes a while to delegate, because I think so many assistants resonate with that. And I like what you said earlier about you're really meticulous with the schedule. He's got everything he needs, because that's where the trust, I'm sure, has been developed. You're thinking of him all the time, and so he can get that stuff out of his head.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's little things like having the booking references, that if he's traveling and he has all the information in the meeting invite, whether or not he looks at that meeting invite or not, that's another thing. And that's a bit of an education that we're working on at the moment. But everything is always there, ready for him. Like, he doesn't have to look here, there and everywhere. He doesn't have to search through his emails. Everything he needs is there. Action specific time in his diary. I've really seen the benefit of that. And I've actually started spreading that out now to the rest of the directors, because I manage their actions for all the monthly board meetings, but trying to remind them to what to do and when to do it. So I thought, I'm actually just going to put action time in your diaries and list all the actions you have to work on. Leading a horse to water and all that, I can't make them do that, but they can't then say they forgot. They can't then say I didn't have time, because you did and he's there, so you couldn't have forgotten and you could do it. It's like being a mum. It's like mothering lots of adults.
But when you've got that skill down, it's so helpful. Yeah, it is so helpful.
And that have actually just doing the action thing in the diary, this week alone, actually, it's been recognised and people actually said, I really see the benefit. I really felt the benefit of having that time and seeing everything that I needed to do attached to the emails. So it really does help.
Fantastic. There's loads of more advice I'd like to get from you. But before we move on, I'd like to get, again, just a sense of your career. If there's any highlights you'd like to share with us, or anything that you're really proud of that you've done.
Obviously, I have to say, I'm a mother to two, so that's my life highlight. But career-wise, I think really in my previous role, when I was promoted to be PA to the executive director, when I first started, I was just, like I said, PA to the operations director, but I completely submerged myself in the team. It was maintenance and repairs for the social housing company. Nothing I'd done before, but I really felt like I was making an impact. I added value. To me, I need to be able to add value to something, because then I feel like I'm achieving something in my day. And I really felt I was able to do that. Like, we really helped people. And then the new executive director came in, and I'll never forget this, and I always quote it. He said, "Don't worry, Catherine, I'm really light touch. You'll barely notice I'm here." A month in, I was like that, oh my goodness.
This is a light touch.
He was like the polar opposite. And I actually said to him, I said, "I don't know who told you you were light touch, but they lied to you. They lied to your face." And in the end, I was really struggling to support them both. And I was basically, it came to the, which way am I going to go? So we had to obviously roll out to formal interview for the formal role, and I got it. But that was a good promotion for me. I really felt like I'd earned that space, again, at my desk. And I was really good. I knew what I was talking about by then, because I'd submerged myself so much into the business and understanding how the business worked and what we needed to do. I was really able to add value to the executive director's role. And off the back of that, I was put on a project about that kind of customer values and the customer journeys, where I actually completely stepped away from my day job. And we did customer interviews, and I was able to physically add value to the customers that we spoke to through various things. So that was really amazing for me. I really felt like I'm getting somewhere. I'm good at this. And I'm being recognised for that. And then, being promoted to being an EA in my current role. I was going to be asking for it in my next review. I was waiting to see how it went. But I knew I really had to prove myself to the CEO to earn that EA title, because you do get to do more. It is a step up. You are more involved. You are more recognised by the business. So it was something I had to earn. And then for him, he actually approached me and said, look, he does this. He said, "Catherine, can I have a word?" and you never really know. In those couple of minutes when you're walking into the meeting room, you never really know what's going to come out and what you're going to be told to do or asked to do. He said, I've decided you're going to be my EA and this for all these reasons, and this is what we're going to do now. I was like, amazing. I was so pleased. I was like proper Cheshire grin. Yeah, I've done it. But again, it's not a walk in the park. Some days it's quite, oh, I've got not much on today. And other days I'm like, oh my goodness, I haven't got enough hours in a day, but I love it. I really love it.
That's congratulations. I love that. When you haven't, you're being recognised for the work that you do.
Yeah.
Because it's not always the case for assistants.
No,
but
I love it
when it's really not. And when you get the stories where an executive has called you in and said, you've got the promotion, you've worked really hard, and I see it and I reward you for it. It's always lovely. It's lovely.
It really is. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree.
Which actually leads me nicely onto my next question, because I wonder if you can give some advice to assistants who are maybe just starting in the assistant career or just slowly working their way up the ladder, any general advice you could give.
Understand the business you're working for. One of my things, way back when I was at the school, I always felt like my job was, I worked for the executive, not for the business. And I've solely focused on that. And if school's a school, education's education, I was never going to teach. So I didn't need to worry about that kind of element of it. But actually when I learned to understand the business, I was therefore able to support and work better for my executive, because you understand what's going on. You're the critical ear really. So you can get information. One of the things I think is really important is to encourage cross team working. So I was, because I understood the business, I was able to be a link between different teams. And I think just completely submerge yourself in understanding the industry that you work for. You don't have to tech people. I don't understand half of the stuff they talk about, but I don't need to. But I do understand people. So understanding who needs to be speaking to the right person. If there's two different teams doing different projects that could actually support each other, be the connection. If there's rumblings of someone being upset or unhappy about someone else or how things are working, or someone's been upset, go to the line managers, be that person that is the go-to, be the go-to between different teams, be go-to between the floor workers and the management, because that's what connects you to the executives. That's what shows your worth and your value, because you can support everybody and it's a happy business is people, because everyone that works there is happy. And if you can be an element of that happiness, if you can make things better, then you'll be flying in an assistant role. And just understand diary management until you can do it upside down with your eyes closed and asleep.
Yeah. How do you go about doing that? Because we all say diary management. Yeah. And it just is a thing that we all know about. So I'd love to get your sense on how you've gone about building that skill. And I know it absolutely comes from understanding the business. That's the fundamental aspect of it, because you need to know what's important in the meetings.
Yeah, so exactly. So something I've learned is something I've actually, since I've becoming much more involved with LinkedIn and your network, all the other assistant networks that are out there. And one of the things I've really taken on board from that is agenda items in meeting invites. So people want to know what that meeting's about. People want to know, give it structure. After lockdown, there were so many online meetings and so many meetings, and people are like, why? Could this meeting have been an email type thing? So just making sure that people know what the meeting's about, who's speaking, who's leading it, who's taking notes, if anybody, who's coming away with the actions. If that can be in a meeting, it just makes people come into that more productive, and there's not the first 5-10 minutes discussing why everyone's there and who's doing what in it. Just saves people time. Could the meeting be half an hour rather than an hour in people's diaries? If I know that someone's got to come from somewhere, if looking at other people's diaries, if I know someone's coming from another meeting in a different part of the building or a different place, I've got to give them time to physically get into the office, accounting for the various traffic and the M25 and everything else you've got to worry about around here at the moment. Giving people time to get to those meetings will give them time to get there, so they don't have to worry about getting there. That's factored in. If it's a big meeting that requires notes in advance, ensuring that everyone's seen those notes, or giving them access or a link in the meeting invite to the actions that should have been taking place or to the previous meeting notes. That's like a hyperlink. It's there. You can't make them look at it, but you can give them the opportunity to do that. And thinking as far in advance as you can, so you always have your regular meetings, your recurring meetings, making sure they don't drop off, actually. That's one of the things is you put there, it's in until January 2024, and then it comes to February, and like, oh, what happened to that meeting? So just remembering to put those in and keep them going. And the focus time, as I was saying before, ensuring that they have focus time where they're not in meetings, because they have to come out of a meeting and digest that meeting, and then they're going into another one and they haven't had time to breathe. Toilet breaks, think literally, you've got to think about everything. Factoring lunch. When I first started, he didn't have a lunch break factored into his diary, and because he was organising his own diary, he'd be back to back 9 till 6, Monday to Friday. So straight away, I put lunch break in. Whether he takes it or not, again, that's up to him, but there is a half an hour in his day where he does not have a meeting. And then focus time and having that as a regular thing. He now has a working from home day where he's on DND all day. I don't book meetings in there. It was an education for people to just not just dump time in his diary without asking me. Now they have to come to me or I just decline it. I'm quite ruthless when it comes to things like that. I'm like, sorry, he's not available. He'll probably say yes. Oh, yeah, it's fine. Or just accept it and not look. I'm like, no, it's not. This is my diary. I organise it. You just be where I tell you to. I'm saying that. If he ever listens to that, I don't really do that. But basically,
no, but it's, take ownership of it. Absolutely, yeah. Take ownership of it.
Yeah. Because I factor in things like for his well-being, he has to have some downtime. Otherwise, he'll burst. And if he bursts, then it's a bigger issue. I nag him about making appointments, like doctor's appointments or dentist appointments. I make sure things, I think about the whole pastoral kind of thing, if that's the right word, like the welfare element of it, because I know he will need that time. And I know that's important. And it's not a case of he's not having a whip out against himself and making himself do more than he needs to. But he'll get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and log on. So he has this extra time. He doesn't miss out on things. But just making sure he has that downtime is so important.
Yeah. Thanks for explaining that. I think it's exactly as you said, it's being proactive with the schedule and really thinking it all through and making sure everybody has what they need.
Yeah.
And that's a really great way to start, I think, for anybody who's listening who may be new to the assistant role. That's just such a great overview of how to manage a diary. So thank you for sharing that. I wonder if there's any aspects of the assistant role or profession that come as a surprise to you since you've been in the role for a while, some things that maybe you didn't quite realise were going to be such a big part of what you do.
Well, last year I was supporting the HR team to do all the reviews, annual reviews. We have about 100 people. We used to do annual reviews every March, and the team was for a short period of time down to one person. So I was actually organising the reviews, booking them in, and actually sitting in on them. And that was quite enlightening. I mean, that's quite a privilege, I think, for a PA or EA to be able to be involved in the HR element of that, and that to that level. But it was enlightening because I learned so much about the business. And so that was quite different. But something I didn't really know.
I suppose there's something that you think you would have liked to have known before you started the role.
I think just organising myself and actually putting myself first. So because it's not just about them, because I've got to look at my diary. And this is something I've really learned and really working on now, is you've got to remember what you need to do as well as what everyone else needs to do.
Yeah.
And not letting that, I always say it's like an organisational battery, and it would run out before I was able to even start looking at myself and what I needed to do. So really remember that you are as important as your exec as well, because you've got to think about your diary as much as everyone else is. Just, I don't know, there was no big surprises. I think because I've just worked towards it and worked up through the ranks, as it were, there was no kind of massive, oh my goodness, if I'd known this before, I would never have done this. But also learning, like never stop learning. There's always so many tools out there. You guys talk about it on your podcasts, all the other assistant networks talk about various different things. There's project management, there's various assistant learning tools that are out there. Just absorb as much as you can, learn as much as you can, because I think it's a growing network, it's a growing role, and the personal development is really important.
And you never know what you're going to get asked over in the assistant role. So I think it's really exactly as you said, it's a growing role. And particularly because of that, so many things get thrown at you, and most assistants will take on any challenge and mostly get it done. So if you've just been picking up things and learning things along the way, you'll find that those tools come in so handy.
Absolutely.
And building your network at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, if someone asks me to do something, I just get stuck in at the social events, for instance, because I'm such an organizer. I love organizing events. Even before I was an EA, I'd be the person my social friends, and I'd be the one organizing. I took 18 girls to Dublin for the weekend on the hen do. No, all people had to do was worry about when they went to the toilet and breathing. Like, I literally, it was meticulous. It was like a full itinerary. I was exhausted, but they all had a great time because I love doing it. So it's a very, really natural thing for me to organize it. But if I'm at a social event, I'll be the one making sure that everyone's doing this, or everyone knows where this is, or there's bin bags for the food, or there's this, that, and the other. I'm just always thinking about it. So I never really have a day off in that respect, but I love it and I'm happy doing it. So yeah, just enjoy it. If you enjoy it, then just, you will love doing this. If you enjoy organizing, enjoy sorting things out and helping other people, this is definitely the role for you.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Mm. Is there any advice that you would give to assistants, or perhaps you've faced this at any point in your career where you hit those, and I have to say they are easing up, but hit those kind of assistant stereotypes or boundaries that sometimes are put in place? Have you ever come across that? And if so, how have you dealt with that?
Well, yeah, because people do still think that you're just there to make the tea and get the boss's lunches and dry cleaning, what have you. It really depends on whether you are happy to do that. Some people aren't. Some people aren't happy to be the traditional secretary PA type thing. I don't mind. I think it's all just part of mucking in. But I work for business where we all muck in. Like, the commercial director will make me a cup of tea. The CEO will be a bad one, will make me a cup of tea. If they didn't do that, I wouldn't be quite probably as willing to. But I know that if we've got I can ask the receptionist, for instance, to go out and get people's lunches if we've got a meeting. I do it sometimes because I just know I'm going to get it done, and it gives me my steps out to walk out to go and get it. But yeah, you will still get that. You'll be that. You'll be like, oh, you're here to do this. No, I'm actually here to be an executive assistant. I happen to do this and I'm happy to, but I don't like people to assume that is my role there. So yeah, it's evolving. Thankfully, I haven't really been up against that, but I do see how that could happen still in this day and age. But yeah, they've just got to assert itself. If you don't want to be that person that's making tea all the time, don't be. Just don't make tea. Make it badly and then they won't ask you to do it again.
They'll never ask you again. Also a tactic of mine over the years. So before we wrap up, there's a couple of questions that I'd like to ask you. You mentioned actually around tools and technology and things like that. Yeah. I wonder what tools, technology, apps, websites, or anything like that you use in your role that you've found helpful?
So OneNote is fantastic. So we're all a Microsoft-based company. So I use OneNote to make my notes from meetings. I used to either write them out in my notepad or just do it in Word. But actually, I find OneNote just keeps it live and you can see it all sitting on your screen all the time. I've just started using Asana, which is literally recommended to me 2 weeks ago. So I'm still trying to familiarize myself with it. But it has I could put all my projects up there, and it has like timeline options. I can put all my tasks. So the more I get to use that, I'm actually really enjoying that product. It's really helpful. And I just have that clipped to my Chrome. So every time my Chrome web browser pops up, it's always there. So I'm finding that really useful. Outlook Diary, I literally put all my notes in there as well. If I need to remind myself to do something when I'm about to go into a meeting, I'll pop a note in there as well. And just, you can't beat a traditional things to do list, really. I do, as much as I'm really trying to just use my laptop now and not have copious amounts of paper around and notebooks and everything, but you really can't beat a good old-fashioned notebook.
I know. I've actually just gone back to it, I have to say, because I was using Trello for a few years. And I just found there was just something not as satisfying as writing out a to-do list.
They can scribble out. If I know I've got a lot to do that day, I'll write out my list and I'll put a little box next to it so I can do the big ticks. It's a significant tick. And I'll do something that I've probably already done that day and then be able to cross it off. And it's so satisfying.
And then you do the thing of writing down the task that you've already done just so you can cross it through.
But yeah, it gives you a good spur on. And also one of the things I've noticed as well, and I have to encourage myself to do it, is the whole eating the frog. So getting the really rubbish job so that you know that there's that one thing you're gonna have to do today that you just don't want to do. It's the email you don't want to send, it's the that one horrible bit of the project that you don't really want to do and you're going to take something to take ages, or it's the boring data entry or whatever it is, just get it done. Because as soon as you've done that, reward yourself with a chocolate bar or a nice cup of tea or a biscuit or whatever you want to do, but just get it done, because the rest of the day is then a breeze. Because otherwise you'll get to the end of the day and think, oh God, I haven't done it again.
It's still
on the mind. And it builds up. Just get it done. Yeah.
Yeah, that's such good advice. And then my last question for you, are there any events or publications or networks or training programs that you've that have helped?
I've been on, done a kind of a few LinkedIn learning things recently, just about public speaking or speaking in a meeting room, and even like an Excel thing. Because I've done quite a lot of work in Excel recently, and I've always used Excel, but to a fairly basic knowledge. So I thought I just need to just see what else is out there and what other options I can do. I obviously follow you guys. I'm part of a couple of the other assistant networks. I follow them on LinkedIn and listen to blogs and other podcasts. But it is something I'm looking to do. I really want to focus now and work on my personal development, because there is so much out there. It's finding the right thing. It's finding the right forum that I can learn in and making sure it's going to help me and, you know, benefit me going forwards. But there is so much out there. I just need to find out the right thing for me.
That's all the time we have. And I have to say that just speaking to you today, I know that you've got a huge amount of experience and skills, and the other assistants who will be listening today will have taken so much from the interview. Catherine, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you so much for listening to the EA Campus podcast. We would love for you to take a minute to subscribe to the EA Campus podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. If you could give us a review, we would so appreciate that too. If you want to check out the show notes, you can do that by going over to the eacampus.com/podcast and take a look at everything we discussed. You can also find all the links to the resources, articles, and tech that we mentioned during the show. If you want to join the conversation inside the EA Campus community, you will also find all of the information on the EA Campus website. The community continues to grow, and we have an amazing group of assistants sharing their careers. We have ongoing events and training for our members, and we would love to see ambitious and career-driven assistants join us. Thanks for your time, and I hope you tune in again to the next episode of the EA Campus podcast.